Hello, everyone. Welcome to Near Falls with D. Hall, a wrestling podcast. On today, we have a very special guest, none other than my good buddy, Mr. Aaron McKinney. Aaron McKinney is well-versed in the sport of wrestling. He is a two-time PJW champion, a two-time state qualifier in high school, a WPIAL champion, and a state runner-up. He also amassed over 100 wins in Lock Haven University. In football, he was a two-time All-State defense selection, an All-Conference multi-purpose back selection, a Fab 22 selection, and the MVP of the prestigious Penn, Ohio game. We're going to get into Aaron's life in the sport of wrestling, touch on his football career, and how he eventually made it back to Western Pennsylvania to coach West Allegheny. All right, on now we have Aaron. Aaron, how are you doing today, buddy?
Doing well, man. Excited to be here. I'm glad it's something you finally put together, and I'm excited that I get to be a part of it. Couldn't ask for a better guy to put something like this together.
Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it. I've been kicking it around for a while. Like, I talked to Justin before earlier, and I think the first episode really went well. A lot of people seem to like it. So we're just going to try to keep it rolling with you. And I know your story's really good. You know, obviously right off the bat, I know you very well. We've known each other for over 20 years. We were practice partners when we were 5 years old. So, you know, when I decided to start this podcast, you were one of the first people I thought of. So let's get right into it. Obviously you started when you were 5 years old. How did you start? Was there a particular person that got you to start, or was there a reason why you started? Take me through that process.
Yeah, so I think just in being born, my mom, her favorite sport growing up was wrestling. My uncle and her brother wrestled. I think whether I decided to wrestle or not, I was going to end up being a wrestler. And it's funny, she loves to tell people a story of when I was a baby and holding me in her lap and looking down at my feet, and she'd look to the person to her right and be like, I can't wait to put wrestling shoes on his feet. And it's something that I've taken and I use as a good story with some family and friends too. But yeah, started when I was 5 years old. Had the privilege to work with the Big D Hall here when we first got started. And similar to how Justin talked about it, it was something that flyers got sent out in the classes at school. And I picked one up, didn't know what wrestling was. Wasn't sure if I was looking at a flyer for a WWE contest or what it was, but I took it home and said, Mom, Dad, this is something I think I want to try. And my mom couldn't have been happier. And my dad kind of helped me get started there as well.
Awesome, man. You know, that's a real similar story to how Justin started. And I talked to a lot of people. They're all kind of the same. It's not like you have a big family tradition or anything like that. And that story that you talk about with your mom being in her lap is so cool to me, because like I said before on my last podcast, you know, I have a 2 month old son, and you know, obviously I'd love for him to wrestle someday, but I'm going to try my hardest not to push him in that direction, kind of let him think on how he wants. But that's great. So obviously you got started in your youth career. You had a lot of early success, correct? You know, like I said off the top, you were a two-time PJW champion. What do you credit that success to early on?
I was just a very lucky kid at a very young age to adapt to a sport. I got surrounded by some really great people right off the bat, practice partners, coaches, and people that wanted to advance the sport and advance as they were growing. And I was lucky enough to get into a club with Scott Hutton over at Cobras.
Was that at Chartreuse Valley?
Yeah, we started at a little fire hall out in Bridgeville. Okay. Once we kind of expanded beyond that, we ended up practicing out at Char Valley High School. But it really gave me a lot of more competitive opportunities and did something for me similar to what Justin's doing over at Gladiators for these kids. And I was able to take things to the next level and really find a calling in the sport.
Okay. Yeah, so I feel like the kind of progression is – for a lot of guys, they started off, at least our age, they started off at Cobras and then it turned into Pit Bulls. Is that kind of how it went for you too?
You saw some back and forth. I mean, there's two great coaches there. We had Scott Hutton, Sonny Abe, who's coached countless numbers of people that have gone on to be successful. So it was something that we were looking for competitive opportunities. And those were two places at the time before clubs really got big that we were able to go and thrive and push each other and challenge each other and become better wrestlers together.
Okay. That's awesome, man. You know, I really remember growing up, you were always the guy that just went the extra mile, that we were done with football practice and I'm walking off with my helmet and I'm ready, like dead tired, and you're doing a hill sprint or you're running around the track or what it may be. So to me, in my eyes, you were always that person that was willing to take the extra step. And, you know, for me, that's kind of how I saw your early career success going. And obviously that mentality for you never changed, I'm assuming, as you got into high school, correct?
Yeah, correct. Definitely. I've always joked with people that don't know much about wrestling and their work ethic and anyone that's willing to step on the mat. I've always joked that there's something a little off with us, our wrestlers. Anyone that's willing to go battle and find joy in beating each other up for 2 hours in practice to go wrestle a 4.5, 6, or 7 minute match. So it was always a mentality for me. And like any wrestler you're going to talk to, they just have a little something off that gives them a little bit of an edge.
Exactly. Like Justin talked about, you know, having that competitive tick. It's definitely something weird with wrestlers. We kind of just, we're almost not right in the head for a lot of us, you know. It depends on the type of situation that you get into. Obviously, you had a great situation with Scott Hutton and Cobras. For a lot of people, we have a big problem in our sport. And I touched with this on Justin a little bit. Parents and how they kind of ruin youth sports. And it's not just wrestling, and it's football, it's soccer, it's really anything. Just growing up, how we grew up, we kind of grew up in that tough time, you know. I was wondering, how do you feel about, like, how parents, how they should be, you know? Obviously, you don't have a son or a girl or anything. I have a son. He's fresh, you know, he's 2-month-old. How would you approach it if you were a parent, just from the outside looking in?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you said, I haven't had a child yet, so I'm no expert on the situation. But I'm just in my eyes and looking how and being able to watch fathers and mothers and sons and daughters react in different areas and of life and of sport and stuff. To me, it was always that to be dad. And I can think of some specific moments that I can touch on, like in those moments, that has to be the most joyous moments of your life to see your son or your daughter succeed. And I think in a way, when we're coaching our kids so hard and in our eyes as coaches, as parents, we see that we're just trying to do the best for them. But taking a step back and just being dad or just being mom, and when son or daughter walks off the mat, walks off the field, they know they're going to mom or dad. They're not going to coach. I think that kind of changes the relationship. And like I said, I remember early on in my career, I was 10 years old wrestling in the old Hershey Arena out of Hershey Park.
Yeah. Almost falling over at this point, right?
Yeah. But at 10 years old, getting the final takedown in the state finals, and we happened to land right at my dad, and I could see my dad jumping up and down with tears in his eyes. And in that moment, he was dad. He wasn't coach. And that was one of our most joyous shared moments that I can remember.
That's a great story, man. And you hear a lot of stories like that, you know, I think of one, and we were younger. I was watching, I think my brother was in the state tournament, and Nino Bonacorsi, who's now at Pitt and pushing to be an All-American, had a really good chance this year before the NCAA tournament got shut down. He had a final takedown. I think it was in overtime or double overtime. And a lot of you out there probably know Mr. Bonacorsi and know Nick and know Nino. I would have thought his dad was going to do cartwheels across the mat. He was so excited. And that is so cool to see that side of things. And I really agree with you. I think that the big thing is, too many parents think they're coaches, and they don't let the coaches coach. You know, obviously, me and you have coached a little bit, and you're now the coach at West Allegheny High School, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. But for me, just on the outside looking in, I 100% agree. I really am going to challenge myself when I get older to kind of just be dad. And, you know, if you have a problem, if my son has a problem, I'll be like, go talk to Coach Aaron or go talk to Coach Justin or whoever it may be at the time. But I 100% agree with you. It's a problem in our sport, and it's really a shame because some kids shy away from it and they completely get turned off the sport because their mom or dad want to live through them. And I hate seeing that. I just want to see the kids go out and have fun. And at 8, 9, 10 years old, you know, you won a PJW title. How's that doing for you today? Is that getting you a job anywhere, or is that, you know, getting you a promotion anywhere?
Yeah, at the end of the day, I had an assistant coach in my college career put it best and give me a whole new perspective. At the end of the day, whether you were a PJW champ, an NCAA champ, you had 2 wins or you had 100 wins, whatever it was, at the end of the day, not many people are really going to care about that when you get into the real world. And
absolutely.
And I think that, like, allowing your kids to be coached and led by others and kind of taking a step back, that's a good stepping stone for them to learn, because you're going to get in the real world and you're going to have to listen to a boss and you can't go to mom and dad, and you're going to have teachers that you disagree with in college. And there's just so many ways that can teach you to grow.
Yep. Absolutely. So moving on into your next step in your career, we're getting into high school, and we're at the point now where we're starting to split time, at least for you. You're splitting time between wrestling and football. Obviously, I said in the intro, you're a standout football player. A lot of people thought you should have played football instead of wrestling. What did you use, or how did wrestling help you in football? Because you see a lot of guys, and it's, you know, they're bigger or smaller or what it may be. Football's everything to them, right? And the wrestling's, oh, that's what those guys do with the little singlets on that are tight to their body. Like, oh, they're soft, or, you know, why would I want to do that? You being a standout football player, for someone that's young listening to this or just getting into football, why should you continue wrestling even if you play football?
Yeah, I'm just off the bat, I'm a big believer in allowing kids as they're going through their development, playing multiple sports and exploring different avenues as they mature and find out what they really love, just for that maturation process. But those two sports, especially for me, I couldn't think of two that were more of a match made in heaven, where the toughness, the mental toughness, the physical toughness, the ability to grind out tough situations in wrestling, and how that translated over to football, where being an undersized outside linebacker and wildcat running back, like I was mismatched in a lot of those scenarios. And there was a lot of lessons I could take from wrestling and a lot of skills I could take from wrestling. I mean, look at some of the best tacklers in the NFL and the wrestling careers they've had. They don't miss tackles. They double leg a lot of people.
Absolutely.
So I was lucky that those kind of worked hand in hand, and wrestling built a sense of stubbornness in me. And I got told by many people that I was too small to play football, and there was a sense of stubbornness that I'm going to prove you wrong, and I'm going to run my head through that wall until I do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the way you described how you play football, for you, for those of you that are out there that don't know, Aaron was a stud on the football field. He played in the years with Mike Caputo. They won a Whitfield championship. Was it your junior year, correct?
Yeah, I believe it was 2009 season.
Okay. So they won a Whitfield championship. And Aaron and Mike split time in the backfield. And our senior season, Mike went down with an injury, and Aaron took over and really didn't miss a beat from where Mike Caputo was at. And Caputo obviously played at Wisconsin, was all Big Ten, and on and on. And he's kind of the well-known name. But to me, Aaron was kind of the glue behind that team. And I'm sure a lot of you younger listeners remember watching him play back in the day. So, you know, we talk a little bit about your football career. Obviously, you were a standout in there, and you had a bunch of accolades and stuff. Moving over to your wrestling side, you know, you were good in high school, or you were good in the youth, and obviously really good in junior high. We're getting into high school. How did your freshman season go in high school?
I'd say it was a fairly successful, from the outside looking in, fairly successful. I think I amassed 30 plus wins, something around that number. was able to win a section title, was one placement away from going to states by finishing fourth in a Whipple. Mm-hmm. So I had a pretty decent year and a good growing year with some good practice partners and some excellent coaches, but definitely a lot to build on.
So that's kind of like a stepping stone in your career. And for those of you that aren't understanding, you know, Aaron took fourth in the Whipple. They changed that role, I believe, 4 or 5 years ago, where you had to take third in the Whipple to go to states. And I'm glad they did, because there was a lot of guys that got left out that weren't able to go to states, definitely deserved, that were in the top five, probably in the state, and they got left at home because of how tough the Whipple tournament was. So those third and fourth place matches were always just so explosive and so exciting. So we're moving in to your sophomore season. You know, you fell a little bit short your freshman season of making to the state tournament. So your sophomore season, we're going in, we'll fast forward a little bit. We're going into your tournament at the Whipple tournament. That day at school, there was kind of like something that happened, and it's kind of it turned into West Allegheny folklore because of how everything happened that day. Can you kind of tell me what happened?
Yeah, it's a funny story. That was also in the Whipple tournament before they went to a 2-day tournament. We wrestled 3 days. So we wrestled Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
That's correct. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And we had to attend schools Thursday and Friday to be able to compete in the tournament. So Thursday, first day of tournament, as long as you're winning, Thursday, Friday, you wrestle one match. So I won my match on Thursday night. Come Friday afternoon, I'm in school, and we had a physical conditioning class, and it was kind of the point in the year where they were allowing us to do our own things, play basketball, go lift weights, whatever it was. And being the stubborn guy that I am and wanting to stay active, I wanted to go play games with the rest of them. And I remember one of our student trainers who was in the class, as well as one of the teachers who knew what the day was and what I was going to compete in later. Said, why don't you, you sit this one out. I don't think you should do anything. I'm like, coach, no, I'm fine. I'll be good. Never got hurt before. What's the chance that I get hurt now? It's the second day of the Whipple tournament. I'll take it easy. Well, long story short, I ended up playing 21, which is a basketball game. And while running to pick up a basketball, rolled my right ankle, struggled to walk to the trainer's room. It blew up to the size of a softball. We immediately put it on our brand new game ready. Matt Treves, our trainer at the time, was half excited, half disappointed in me. He did get to try out his new piece of equipment, but was not very happy with who he was trying it out on. Had to make a phone call to Coach Mike Johnson, who, again, was not very happy. I believe he dropped whatever he was doing and raced to the school. As I'm sitting there with another coach, John Dank, and Mike comes in, Coach Johnson comes into the room, and me and Coach Dank had talked about possibly injury defaulting out of the match, giving it a day to rest, and then wrestling to the wrestlebacks. And the look on, I'll never forget the look on Coach Johnson's face. It was like anger and disappointment, and there was no way he was ever going to let me injury default that. He goes, we'll tape it however we need to tape it. We had it taped under my shoe, over my shoe. I felt like Igor dragging a club behind me, trying to warm it up. And ended up lucking out that day and pulling out a match against a kid that had beat me earlier in the season at the county tournament. And really just when the adrenaline took over, I didn't really even feel it, but it was quite a roller coaster of a ride in the matter of those few hours from sprained and ankle to second day of Whipple match.
And that's such a crazy story that you think about. And a lot of guys, you know, they go into wrestling tournaments, or sometimes guys have off tournaments, or they say, what happened to him? That could have very well been you. You know, by all accounts, I don't remember what seed you were. By all accounts, everyone had you penciled in to go to states that year. And just a stupid young decision could have taken you right out, and you wouldn't have made states that year. And that's just crazy how the things work sometimes. Just playing basketball, messing around with your buddies at school could really just take you out. And, you know, for all you guys listening out there, just be careful, man. Learn from Aaron's mistakes, right? So you take care of business there. Did you qualify for the state tournament your sophomore year?
I ended up falling short that year as well. Okay. I lost to, I believe it was Cole Baxter in the semis, drops down and lost the ultimate ride out match in the WrestleBacks as well. Fell short that year.
Okay. So you hit the semis and you take two losses in a row and you fell short again. So we're going into your junior year, and this is the year that you won the Whitfield Championship.
Correct.
So what changed? You know, obviously you're knocking on the door. What changed for you to break that door down? Now you're a Whitfield champion. Now you're going to states with a full head of steam. And you know, we'll get into it in a bit, but you had a great run at the state tournament. So what changed? Was there an off-season program that you had going on? Obviously, you were still playing football. What changed for you? Was it coming off the Whitfield Championship for football? Talk to me about that situation.
You could say there was a motivation factor behind coming off a successful football season with a team, but going into an individual sport, I think I had some great guys the years prior that made it to the state tournament and that year, and guys like Jake Leninsky and Zach Kelly that were qualifiers in the years prior, along with Troy Regard, who qualified in both those years and ended up being, I think, a three-time Whitfield champ.
Yeah, three-time Whitfield champ. Yep.
I ended up getting heavy enough to be able to practice with him my junior year, his senior season. So really, I had a lot of internal motivation. I feel like I was mature, and I felt like I had fallen short of a lot of goals in those first 2 years, and this was going to be something I was really going to set a tone with, get on college's radars and give myself an opportunity at a future, as well as knowing that that's the same goal for a lot of these guys walking in every day. Troy's there to compete. I need to be there to compete too, not only to make him better, to make myself better, to make the team better. And it's that, I think at that point I kind of adopted a mentality that I preach to my wrestlers every day now, that every time you walk in that door, you need to step in here with a purpose, whether it was to exhaust myself, whether it was a certain position I need to get better at, whether it was to push the team to a different level. I just feel like I matured a lot as a wrestler, as a kid, and I really had my goal set high, and I had people preaching in my ear. I had Justin training me when he had his gym, and every rep, you are the greatest, and speaking greatness into my life, and I just started to believe that. And
so you kind of like a visualization type of thing, right?
Yeah.
And you know, for a lot of people you talk to, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and it's kind of what made me want to start this. You know, I kind of really know the life of Dan Gable in and out. I've read his book 3 or 4 times. I've heard multiple podcasts on him. And that was his biggest thing that he used to preach to all his wrestlers, was visualization. See yourself at the top of the podium at the end of the year at the national tournament. And it sounds like kind of that's what you had going on going into your junior season. And that's a big thing. You know, you have Justin, and obviously we heard Justin on last week, and what a motivator he is. And he can just talk you into existence and literally can talk you into running through a wall, right? So that makes so much sense to me. And obviously anyone that knows Troy Regard, he is as hard-nosed as they come. So going in and competing with him every day and grinding with him every day, you don't have a choice to get better, because if you don't, he's just going to ground you into the dust, right?
Exactly. You know, we with Troy and the coaching staff we had, with the like Mike Johnson, John Dank, Ron Tarquinio, Jason Cardillo, the physical shape these guys were in, the wrestling knowledge that they had, and the ability to, when you needed to be kicked in the ass, you got beat that day. If you needed help, they were there to help you. And it was such a cohesive staff that could speak to every level of every kid on the team. And
what a coaching staff that was. You know, you look at it, Coach Johnson was the head coach. Coach Jason Cardillo ended up going to Canamac, and he ended up being a head coach. And also Coach Tarquinio ended up being a head coach at West Allegheny before you started. So, you know, you had three head coaches on staff, and that's pretty incredible. We were very fortunate during that time to kind of have that support and to have those guys driving us, which is awesome. And Coach Dank wrestled in college. He wrestled at Duquesne, I believe.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he's no short of knowledge. He runs your junior high program now. So, I mean, really, what a great situation that we were, you know, not so much me. I mean, I was there kind of just enjoying watching you guys go, and that you walked into your junior year. So we're getting past, you win the Whitfield Championship. you're rolling high. You know, you're relatively healthy going into the state tournament. You end up making a run, and this is the year that you make the state finals. Okay, so take me through that process. I know that there was injuries along the way, and by the time you got to the state finals, you weren't the same wrestler, correct?
No, definitely the PIA tournament and anybody that's wrestled in it or coached at it or had the privilege to watch these kids go do battle knows that that is one meat grinder of a tournament. And if you're standing on the podium at the end of the day, you really deserve to be there. And like I was fortunate enough to have a really good spot in the bracket. But still, like you still had kids that deserved to be there. They wanted to be there and win just as much as you. And it took a toll on everybody and my body, especially going in the finals. I remember when we started making our run, me and Troy, to the finals, we had our athletic director out there, our head and assistant football coaches out there. And I've got a hamstring issue that we think is a cramp. Come to find out, it was a little worse than a cramp. And our football coaches and AD and wrestling coaches all sticking me in an ice bath and giving me ibuprofen. And I've got a big old black eye, which 98% of the tournament this time has a big old black eye or one swollen shut. Right. So yep. Limping out through the Parade of Champions was quite the picture and something I'll always remember.
You know, and that's so tough. Even today, like you just spoke on, the PIAA tournament is literally the definition of a meat grinder. I mean, we're in the best wrestling state in the country. You look at any time, there's always at least one nationally ranked wrestler in every bracket. And sometimes there's two, there's three, there's four. And sometimes there's up to five guys nationally ranked in a bracket. So the PIAA tournament is definitely the definition of a meat grinder. So you obviously fell short in the finals. You kind of ran into a buzzsaw, and I believe one of the Alton brothers. And obviously they went on, was it Dylan or Aaron?
I ended up wrestling Andrew.
Oh, Andrew, that's right. So Andrew went on to Penn State and had a very good career. I believe he was a two-time All-American. So no shame in that. I mean, hell of an opponent there. So, you know, we're moving past your junior year. We're going into your senior season. Okay, so we're just going to move kind of fast forward right to Whitfield's again. This season, you had a lot of battles with Lorenzo Thomas, correct?
Correct.
And Lorenzo was someone that you've been wrestling since you've been, what, 5 years old?
Yeah, when we talk about going to back to Cobras, he was one of my very first practice partners in the Cobra room when we were 6, 7 years old. And here we are at 17-year-old seniors wrestling in the Whitfield Finals.
And that's crazy. That happens all over the place. You know, you see a couple years ago, well, it would have been almost 10 years ago now, Quentin Wright wrestled a guy from Cornell. I believe his name was Steve Bozak. And they went to the same club together. They wrestled in youth, in junior high, and high school. And they wrestled over 10 times in their career. And they're still wrestling in the national finals. And that's just the way it works out sometimes. And you and Lorenzo's matches were always so, so close. So you made it to the Whitfield Finals, correct, that year?
Correct.
And you lost to Lorenzo?
Correct.
Okay. So we're going into the state tournament. You know, you win your first match, and you move into the second match, and we hit a big road bump here. Can you kind of walk me through what happened there?
Yeah, probably one of my two most, self-shameful, I hold a lot of regret in around two matches that happened to be at the state tournament, this being one of them. I was wrestling a very great wrestler from Bedford named Mark Havers. I believe he was a two-time state runner-up. Eventually ended up at Clarion for a stint as well. But knowing going in the quarters, I'm wrestling a guy. We've both been to the state finals, both looking at a position to possibly get back to the state finals. About 11, 12 seconds in the match, I remember going to a pull single. That's about the last thing I remember in that match. He defended the shot. We ended up in a front head position. While in the front head position, my neck got a little trapped, and it wasn't anything intentional where he was trying to choke me out or doing anything illegal. It just happened to be in a kinked position while he was in his front head and my head was off to the side on a single, that as we were both fighting against each other, I did happen to black out and pass out in that moment. The ref being on the other side of what was going on, didn't see that I was unconscious and called the pin. So on the books, it was a fall in 16 seconds, but I remember all of about 12 or 13 of that match.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, it's kind of crazy how things happen like that. Was that tough to accept that you kind of got your senior season taken away like that?
I think in that moment it was like, it didn't feel real. I didn't know what was happening. Like, were the trainers going to allow me to wrestle? And it was hard to take in, and a lot to take in. I think that ended up affecting me in my next match a little bit, not sitting to make excuses.
Right,
but
absolutely.
It was definitely a took a mental toll.
Right. So, you know, obviously you dropped your next match in the blood round and you finished your high school career as a 2-time state qualifier and a state finalist, you know, Whitfield champion, which is an awesome career. In the state of Pennsylvania, that is an excellent, excellent, excellent career. So now we're done with your senior season. Now you got a decision to make. Okay. We know now you eventually, you know, I said in the intro, you end up at Lock Haven. But you had offers to play football. You're a very good football player. Why did you decide to go wrestling, and how did that process go? Because I talked to Justin a little bit about it in the last episode. You know, recruiting is a whole nother ballgame, probably even since you were in high school, right? Mm-hmm. So how did Lock Haven get in touch with you? Why did you make that decision? And what kind of offers were you looking at for football?
It was interesting how that visit to Lock Haven actually ended up transpiring, where, again, being stubborn and that stubbornness of proving people wrong, I was determined to prove that I was tough enough, I was good enough, and I was big enough to play football at the collegiate level. Was lucky enough to have a successful season to get some Division I AA offers at schools like Robert Morris and Duquesne and whatnot, but was looking at some smaller schools, your Mount Union, your West Virginia Wesleyans, your Slippery Rocks, your Wittenbergs.
Pretty much all local, high-end AA schools, stuff
like
that.
Some Division II, Division III powerhouses in there with the Mount Unions and the Wittenbergs and all that stuff. But I had made up my mind. I remember standing in Dick's at one point and handing my mom a pair of wrestling shoes, and we decided that was the last wrestling pair of wrestling shoes she was going to have to buy me, and I had made my decision. If there's anything that I can share in the recruiting process with those of you that are going to get into it or are currently going through it, where I messed up big time, especially on the wrestling side, is make sure you talk to these coaches, make sure that you keep that line of communication open, make sure that you're doing your part in your due diligence, because that's where I messed up and lost a lot of opportunities on the wrestling side. Once I decided to flip my decision, did eventually get on the phone. I think it was a number I didn't recognize, and normally I don't answer those. And for whatever reason, I thought it was a telemarketer. I was like, I'm going to screw the telemarketer today. And it just so happened to be Coach Robbie Waller at Lock Haven, who was the head coach at the time. And we had a good conversation. We talked about fishing. We talked about hunting. We talked about small schools, all things that I enjoyed and things I was looking for in a school. And he got me down for a visit. Once I got down for a visit, fell in love with the area. It was that small town family kind of feeling to me, like small class sizes. You got to know your teammates, your coaches, your teachers, your all that stuff, all the same kind of feeling that we had in high school, that I really enjoyed and didn't want to lose out on. And it was funny, right before that visit, I remember being with our football coach, Coach Bob Palko, and I heard you're going on a visit to Lock Haven. And I told him, I was like, yeah, I don't know why. It's a waste of time. I don't know why I'm wasting a visit. I'm going to play football.
Right.
Once we got through the visit, I remember him being one of the first ones to get a text from me that I was looking at a possible opportunity between financial aid and offered scholarship to go to school for free. And coach, it's free. I can't go play football. This is something that I have to pursue. There was a little bit of a monetary factor there that I thought I was getting when I was going to drive it there. But I did end up really enjoying my 5 years at Lock Haven, made a lot of really great friends that were in my wedding. And it was a great experience there as well.
Right. And that's kind of what you want to look for in a school. For all of you that are listening out there, I know you're going through the recruiting process. It's tough, man. And I'm just from the outside looking in, like I've said before, and I'll say it probably 10,000 more times on this podcast, I was never good to be recruited, good enough to be recruited. Just take your time. Really think about all situations involved and really talk to your family and the people that love you. I know sometimes looking back when I was that age and I didn't want anything to do with my parents and what they told me and what they thought was best for me. I was a young, hard-headed 18-year-old kid. Well, listen, your parents know what's best for you. They know you better than anyone else. Listen to them. Talk to them. Talk to your coaches. They'll help you through the process. Just make sure it's the right fit for you and make sure it's the right place, because you see a lot of guys, they kind of commit to one place, one thing changes, and all of a sudden they're transferring. So, you know, we get through that process with you, Aaron, and now you're a Lockhaven, right? And, you know, we talked a little bit off air, and obviously we know each other really well. We hang out all the time and we're great buddies. But this is something I really didn't know too much about you, Aaron. And we kind of lost touch when you went away to Lockhaven. And now that you're back, you know, it's like we never missed a beat. But your freshman year at Lockhaven, you kind of said it was the lowest point in your athletic career. And obviously, I talked to Justin a little bit, and he said kind of the same thing. And he talked about going to your freshman season at Division I wrestling. Can you talk about your experience?
Yeah, I mean, anyone that's had any kind of success coming out of high school, like, you've got a sense of confidence about you, and call it ego, call it confidence, whatever you want to call it. Coming in, you feel pretty good about yourself, rightly so. You've had some accomplishments in high school, and I felt good coming in, was able to go to camp in the summer, meet some of the guys, be a part of the team. And that was that first practice there was kind of my first humbling experience. I was recruited and projected at a 157, 165 pounder, and got to practice with the then starting 165 pounder, who was a senior, might have been a redshirt senior, but he was in his last year there. And I remember him at one point got into a snap down position. He put his hand on the back of my head, walked me around the mat for the remainder of our go. And by the end of that practice, I could no longer lift my head up. So definitely a rude awakening in that first practice, but you know, it was a learning experience, a learning curve, and kind of brought my ego down and brought me back down to earth. So to that point, it was good, and things were going to progress. It wasn't until a few weeks later, after I had been home, received a call from our coach, our 174 pounder, who was our only 174 pounder, and again, I was recruited and probably going to redshirt as a 157 pounder. Had been in a motorcycle accident. He was dead on arrival at the hospital. I believe they reattached his left arm. So very, very bad accident there. And he's doing well. He's thriving.
That's good.
Live and all that today. But got a call. This is about 2 weeks before school started, and said, "Oh, hey, Aaron," explained the situation. "Would you be willing to bump up to 174 and compete for a starting spot? We've got one other young guy coming in." And at that point it was a, "Yeah, coach, whatever the team needs" kind of mentality. And he had me again, believing like being a smaller athletic guy, I was going to be faster, I was going to be in shape, all that stuff. So, I remember he had me step on a scale. He goes, "What do you walk around at? Like probably like 180, 185. I'm like, "Let me go check." And I stepped on the scale and I believe it was somewhere around between 172 and 174. And it's like, "Coach, yeah, like 182. He's like, "Oh, good, great. Try to come in at 190. Came in a sloppy, heavy 174.
So we're not talking shredded up. We're talking eating pizza.
We're talking as much weight as you can gain and get as close to 190 in 2 weeks as possible. And that consisted of a lot of bad dieting and limited exercise there.
And for you, that's got to be tough, because anyone that knows you now, you're the complete opposite of that. Yeah, you'll crush some bad food every once in a while, but you know, you're kind of a machine when it comes to the diet and the working out. But we're going to get into that here in a little bit. So, you know, your coach calls you, the 174 starter has a terrible accident. You're starting at 174. Now, I'm sure in your mind, you know, you're always one of the strongest kids in high school. I'm sure in your mind you thought you can handle it. How did that season go for you?
That, we spoke of being a low point in my wrestling career. The season was not successful whatsoever in a lot of ways. Not successful in the way that I went 6-20 that year and got manhandled by the likes of Matt Brown and about half of the Big Ten and their backups that year was something that I never really had to deal with. And it was a learning experience. I've been blessed and very lucky to have a lot of success leading up to that point in life and in school and in athletics. So it was hard to deal with. And I remember a lot of times like sitting in my room by myself or like leaving the locker room in disgust and embarrassment to not be around my teammates, really like contemplating, is this where I belong? Is this a sport that I really, am I as good as people have led me to believe? Like, do I deserve to be here? Am I taking an opportunity away from someone that does truly deserve to be here? And should I transfer? Should I go play football? And I think the thing that actually kept me there, because I was about 99% sure that I was leaving. I was,
after your freshman year?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was the guys that I had on my teammates, the guys like Dan Neff, Cody Wheeler, Bob Ream. We had some older guys. The guy that was beating me up was Seth Creasy. He was a guy to look up to. Our heavyweight, Harry Turner, who ended up being a really good friend. I mean, the list goes on and on with the group of guys. My roommate, Phil Sprinkle, was a Dallas Town guy, and I lived with him for 3 years. If it wasn't for these guys that I have around me, and the relationships and the bonds that I had, I would have been gone after that year. Just not in the right frame of mind to be a collegiate wrestler at that point.
That's the great thing about our sport, Aaron. You know, for as much as it is an individual sport, it's as much a team sport as well, right? Even if we're on the mat or off the mat, even if you're club, not in the club, what it may be, it's really a family atmosphere. And it's a weird type of bond wrestlers have, right? We're like brothers. And it's really true. Like, you talk about going to battles with these guys that you really wanted to kill them during a 2-hour practice, but you get off the mat and you look at them and you're like, I'd take a bullet for that guy, right? And growing up with you, Aaron, I loved watching you wrestle almost as much as I loved competing. And to this day, you're one of my best friends. And we have that brotherhood that we created through 20 years of wrestling. And I look at some of the guys at Gladiators, those guys are so close, but we go to practice and watch them wrestle. And I've literally seen them almost get in fist fights, mm-hmm. right? So that's the great thing about our sport, that it is so cool, the relationships that you form and the brotherhood. So just if you get out there for you young guys that are getting ready to go to college, you know, if there's anything you could take from Aaron's story and Justin's story, and I'm sure the next couple guys that I have on, they'll tell you the same thing. Don't get discouraged. Keep grinding and lean on someone. You know, don't come in and be this crazy, cocky kid. Lean on someone and learn. And I'm sure, you know, the teammates and your brotherhood will help you out. So, you know, you have a tough year at Lock Haven. We're moving on into your sophomore year. And this is kind of where you find your stride, right? So what happens in your sophomore year, you know, because obviously you end up going to be a very accomplished Division I wrestler. You had 100 wins. There's not many people that can say that. 100 wins at the Division I level, that's nothing to joke about. I mean, that's very impressive. So take me on that ride, man. Like, how'd you get through the tough times to now you're working your way towards something very positive?
Yeah, definitely my sophomore year. Not again, it was a so-so okay year. I'd call it a 500 year. I think I ended up 25 and 24, something along those lines. But definitely a big turning point to go from 6 wins to 25 wins at the collegiate level. And again, I have those guys to thank to keep me there, to keep pushing me there, and to see something bigger. But starting to see and believe in coaches that wanted to build me as a wrestler, and finding different coaches that I kind of clicked with, and everybody's going to kind of float to their different coaches, their assistant, their head coaches. And I found a group of guys that were willing to fight for you. And I remember a point when I was starting to finally put some matches together and win, and we were wrestling at the Penn State Open. And Coach Scott Moore, who's the head coach now at Lock Haven, I'm wrestling a kid from Rutgers. It comes down to the last, he's winning by 1 point. I think it's a 3-2 match, something along those lines. And he, Coach Moore, is on me about the pressure and the pace that I need to keep. And just like listening to that coaching broke the kid to get him to take a bad shot. We get to a position where it's almost like 50-50, and then get to a point where it should be awarded two and the ref's not awarding it. And when I'm saying Coach Moore's in the circle, I'm not saying 2 steps inside the big circle. He is standing inside of the center circle before the whistle's blown and the match is blown dead, telling this ref that that should be two, and he's in his face. And that was something that, like, I can believe in these coaches, and I know that they're going to go to battle for me. And I knew I was in a good spot, and I could get rid of all that regret and doubt, and I could just wrestle. I could go practice. And coming down to a weight class that I fit in at 165 and kind of was starting to grow into, I think was very helpful. And
there you go. Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, you talk about Coach Scott Moore, and he, to me, is one of the hottest coaches in the NCAA right now. You know, he had the opportunity to go to Maryland and he turned it down because he wanted to stay at Lock Haven and keep building that program. That dude seems like he's on cloud nine 24/7. And I'm sure to wrestle for a guy like that, it was just a blast.
Oh my God. Every day, it was exciting to sit on the wall and see what was going to come through that door every day. I'm not sure how many Mountain Dews that guy drank a day or how much he had in his office, but he would come down every day, hopped up on that Mountain Dew, had just sold another donor, got more money for the program. He was hustling all day long, and he was hyped, and he was going to kick someone's ass in wrestling practice and let you know how good he did that day.
I love it.
And it just raised the elevated the room.
Yeah.
And people wanted to be great, and it was awesome. And the things he's done for that program, like, I can't speak enough good things around him. Great guy. Like, he's got a great coaching staff with him. He's got kids coming in that believe in the rise.
Yeah, the rise.
And
that's right.
They're doing great things, and I'm happy that I can have my name attached to something like that.
Right. So you're kind of, you know, you were kind of in the transition period of the Scott Moore era at Lock Haven, correct? He took over your senior year, I believe.
No, he was the head coach, I believe, 3 years. So my red shirt and then my red shirt, junior, red shirt, senior year.
Okay. So, you know, you have your sophomore season, you take your red shirt. We're going into your red shirt junior season. Coach Scott Moore takes over, and this is a guy that you can believe in, right? And, he goes to battle for you, and you have a close relationship with, you're established on the team with all the guys, and you're very tight. So your junior season, you know, you jumped another level. Take me through that process, because in our sport, it's all about jumping levels, just getting a little bit better. Any coach that you kind of sit with, and any good coach I've ever been around, they all have all these cliches, right? 1% better every day, or do something, one thing better today to get you better to go to tomorrow. So how did you progress in coming off your redshirt season into your redshirt junior season?
Yeah, I think between my redshirt year and my redshirt junior year, it was my big progression was just kind of getting back to myself and my mentality. And it's funny where I kind of got it was off the wrestling mat. And we had a group of guys that we would hang out and play games. And when it was nice, we would go find a patch in the outfield and we'd play pickup football games. And some of these guys knew that I played football. Some knew more than others and all this stuff. But we'd go play, and anybody that knows wrestlers, a lot of wrestlers aren't necessarily the greatest athletes off the mat, phenomenal wrestlers, but
yeah.
It was fun to be one of the more athletic ones and playing football with them, and something I felt comfortable. And it's like, you know what? Like, I'm starting to feel a little bit myself. And even games, we called it Princess Ball, was a warm-up game. It was basically handball where you dunked it in a trash can, but it was a ball with princesses on it, so we called Princess Ball. And
wrestlers, I'm going to cut you off, Aaron. That's the one great thing, and I've talked about this to numerous people. Wrestlers can make games out of anything. Mm-hmm. You give them a towel, you give them a cup, you give them anything, they can make games out of it. And it's so funny to see some of the games that kids create. I just really enjoy, and that's another thing that, you know, I could go on and on about wrestling, obviously. That's why I have a podcast, but that is so cool. So go ahead and continue your story.
Yeah, just like little instances like that, I was starting to see myself just mentally getting back to myself and having a sense of confidence and knowing that, like, I was a guy that could do things and be exceptional. And I started to believe that. And I took that on the mat with me now. I was starting to get a little bit closer to that. I expect to win. I expect to be on the podium kind of mentality. Still wasn't there yet, but had made another jump after a fairly successful redshirt year. And now I had coaches that were in my ear saying that they believed it as well, that they seen that what I can do, and they were helping me believe it along the way as well.
So, and it sounds like, you know, in a weird way, you know, football, getting back to your football and playing that, even if it's pickup, they kind of jump started and got your confidence going again. And some guys, they just need that. They need a little bit of juice to get themselves going, kind of like a starter. So, you know, you get through your junior season, and we're moving on to your senior season. And, you know, I was around you a little bit. You came home for a little bit, stretch of time here. And I watched you in the summertime just grind and grind and grind and grind. And really put a lot into your senior season. And you cut down to the next weight class, right?
Yeah, ended up competing at 157 that year.
So started off at what you were originally supposed to come in at, right? So you went up from 174 down to 65. Now you're 57. You know, and you had a pretty successful senior season, correct?
It didn't end quite the way I would like it, but had some good times. Yeah.
Right. So that's what I was, you know, about to get into. So, and we talked off air, and you said this is another one of your low points of your career. And I talked to you about this when this happened, and we weren't as close as we are now. But I just remember feeling your pain for you when this all went down. So, walk me through your EWL tournament, your senior year, and what happened after that. And you know, therefore, you know, we'll get into kind of this kind of was the time that you had to hang it up.
Yeah, it was a year coming in the tournament that I felt I had something to prove, having come in the year prior. My redshirt junior year as a number one seed, getting upset in the semis, finishing third in the tournament, and then missing, getting a qualifying bid by, I don't even know how many, what it ended up being, but very close to making the national tournament that year. So I had something to prove in this tournament, and felt that I had an opportunity to get some good wins as well as get an upset to get myself to the national tournament. And, I don't know if it was overconfidence. I don't know if it was like looking past the guy, whatever it was in the moment. I find myself losing in the first round to a kid that I had majored earlier that year, and ended up dropping the next match to a tough kid from George Mason, kid that I had lost to earlier in the year as well. But going 0-2 in a tournament that I felt that I needed to wrestle my best at, and having wrestled the worst possibly I had in my career, having maybe one other time ever gone 0-2 in a tournament once or twice in my entire career. And it was really hard. So I had my frustrating moments where you run off the mat, you're slamming your headgear, you're pissed off because you're lost. But there was a moment when it really hit me, and it wasn't until I was alone and in the showers and changing in the locker room. And I remember just like breaking down and like sliding down to the floor in the shower and bawling my eyes out to the point that I believe other people even felt uncomfortable being in the locker room. But right. It was finally hitting me that I didn't do what I was supposed to do. Like, I wrestled the worst tournament of my life. This is how I'm going out, and right, my wrestling career is over. And it was something that hit me very, very hard and had a had an effect on my life, and it still does to this day in both positive and negative ways.
So, you know, you have the worst tournament in your life, and it ends up being the last tournament of your life. Okay, so we know now that you're the coach of West Allegheny. How did you pick yourself up? How did you dust yourself off? Because we talked to Justin. It took him 14 years to get over him leaving the sport. You know, you were able to get up, dust yourself off, and get right back, you know, not competing, but back on the horse for the sport. What went into that process? Did someone call you? Did you have a lot of self-thought? Because it's very tough for someone that has been doing it for so long, and all of a sudden that purpose that you had, that drive that you had for years and years, it's gone. So walk me through how you picked yourself up.
Yeah, man, that was probably one of the hardest battles that I've ever gone through, and I'm still battling with it today, where everything ended all of a sudden, and it sent me searching. Like you said, that all that effort and everything, like your passion, everything's been ripped out of your life, that I went searching and I tried to find it in other competitive ways and things like CrossFit and weightlifting and other avenues. But it was hard for me to try to get it back in wrestling. And like Justin said, it was something that I avoided for a while, not quite as long as him, because of the people that I'll touch on here that I had in my life to kind of bring me back. But living in State College in Lock Haven in central Pennsylvania, which has some of the greatest wrestling you're going to see, and Penn State University, you know, it was right walking distance to Rec Hall.
Right.
I couldn't bring myself to watch a match live. I couldn't bring myself to watch a match on TV. I couldn't watch the PIAA finals on TV. I wanted nothing to do with the sport, because all it did was bring me disappointment and bitterness and resentment. And I was asking myself what if questions, and I went through that for a lot, where I'd have conversations like, oh, I'd love to come back. I'm living in Lock Haven now, and I'd like to come back and roll the guys in a room, but I could never really get myself to go do it, because the what if. I had to walk into a room where I felt that I had failed, and just too much bitterness with it. And it wasn't until I got a phone call, actually, and I was living in Lock Haven. Rocky McGeary, who is one of the other coaches at Gladiators and has two sons that are doing great things and going to do many great things at the collegiate level at Waynesburg University and West Liberty. He called me, and the current head coach, Ronnie Tarquinio at West Allegheny, had just gone through a situation where he decided to step down from coaching and it left the team, and Ty and Justin's son, Jordan, at the time. And
you're very close with that.
Yeah, these are family guys.
Yeah.
Us. Yeah. So it left them in a situation where they were searching. And when I got that call, it said, hey, like, we don't have any coaching. Like, we don't have a head coach. Would you be interested in moving home? That's when it kind of gave me a different purpose. And I was still searching, but it gave me a purpose of, you know what? A conversation I've always had with Justin was give back. Always come back, always give back. And this was my opportunity to come back and give back and kind of right my ship mentally and do something bigger that I wasn't able to achieve myself, but I could aid these kids and trying to get to their dreams and learning from my mistakes and my shortcomings. And everything just kind of fell in from place from there. And I was very blessed, very lucky that the opportunity arose through that phone call.
You know, man, that is so cool to hear that story, and going all the way through to come back to your roots, to pick yourself up, because a lot, you know, at the end of the day, there's only one NCAA Division I champion, right, in each weight class. So a lot of guys don't achieve their dreams, and a lot of guys don't get to where they want to go. So there's probably guys out there that's listening to this that are going through that right now. And maybe not, because maybe they can't hear it, but maybe this is the first thing that they listen to. And for you to tell your story and to think about going 0-2 in your last tournament, and you're a very successful wrestler, you've probably only done that maybe one other time in your entire life, to pick yourself up and now you're giving back to your alma mater. It's just such a cool story. So we're going to get into your coaching side here, and I just really want to commend you on that, man. That's such an awesome way to give back and to come back and pick yourself up. So you talked about being out of it and not being around it. What was it like stepping back in that wrestling room for the first time?
Oh, man, it was a surreal moment. I remember taking a picture of the mat room and to post on Instagram and hearing someone say coach for the first time and not responding because I didn't – coach, wait, no, that's me. But it was cool to see, especially the group that I got to come back to, a great group of people, of kids and parents and guys that I saw in baby carriers and baby diapers that grew right. Some of the first right. people that I got to do a one-on-one when I was in high school and they were in youth and Justin was running his gym and see the maturation and the growth progress of these kids. And now I'm their high school coach. And like, I had a bond with them coming in and two of them were part of the interview process. And it was, I can't even put a word to the feeling of
right.
This is the group I get to come back with. Something was meant to be here.
Right. So, you know, you come back and you're coaching guys that we've known for years. You know, we always talk about the story of little Ty at Justin's gym and Mickey hitting that heavy bag and him climbing up on that bag. He's what, 2, 3, 4 years old?
In diapers.
And anyone who knows Ty Waters out there know that he's literally insane. And he's in diapers on top of this heavy bag. And Mickey's one of Justin's good buddies. And he was in the H2O fight club with Justin, right? So Mickey's hitting this heavy bag and Ty's sitting up there. You can't knock me off. Just being a little brat. And now, like you said, Aaron, you're coaching him. And, you know, obviously Ty's a very good wrestler. And so, you know, you're coming back. Was it all roses and all good things when you come back?
I mean,
did you have any, you know, tough experiences off the bat?
Of course. Like any coaching position, you're going to have your frustrations, whether it be with the kids, with it, like holding them accountable to their grades, getting kids bought in that maybe necessarily never had any kind of structure like this in their life, and pushing kids that have never been pushed in their life. And you get some bounce back and you get some people that might not agree with methods. And there's so much in coaching behind the scenes that people don't get to realize, that a lot of these guys that have been doing it for years, I commend them. And like, now having done it for 2 years now, it's such an accomplishment to see the success that some of these coaches have built in these kids. And but when you have a bigger picture and you see like what your priorities really are in those moments, those smaller little frustrations and things behind the scenes don't really seem that big. So yeah, I mean, nothing is ever going to be all roses and it's not all perfect and you're not always going to make the right decisions. I've had the conversation with Rocky McGeary and a bunch of other people. As a coach, you're not always going to make the right choice. You're not always going to do the right thing, but all you can do is believe in what you're doing and get the kids to buy into it and know that you have their best interest.
So you're coaching these guys and, you know, you're talking about the best interest for them and we know them as people. How do you go about, and going back to what we talked about earlier in the episode, talking about parents, how do you as a coach want to not be remembered, because you got a long way to go? I'm sure you'll write your own story, but I'm sure it's a big goal of yours to progress these kids, not only just as wrestlers, as people, right?
Yeah. And that was a big thing that I've preached throughout my interview process to get the job, sitting down with my wife and talking about things, sitting with other coaches. My biggest achievement in coaching has nothing to do with how many times my team or my name, my personal name is mentioned, how many championships are attached to my name, like all the accolades, like, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. It feels great to win all that stuff. But if we can grow these people and these kids into young men and young women and put them in society and make the world a little more better with each single one of them, and along the way they get to be a successful athlete and a successful wrestler, and along the way they get to get their education paid for, that's the most fulfilling thing to me And seeing a couple kids now that I've gotten a coach go to college, and all I want from them is a t-shirt. And like, that's a great feeling to know that, you know what, you had a hand in that kid's journey, and he's going to grow on to do great things. All the trophies, all the awards, all the accolades, nothing, none of that's going to add up to what these kids can accomplish if you instill good things in them.
You know, Aaron, and I think that's a great place to kind of wrap up this episode. We've been talking for over an hour, and it's really just a great conversation. We've touched on a bunch of things, a bunch of coaching, your ups, your downs. I'm going to start something different that with you that I didn't do with Justin. My podcast is called Near Falls with D Hall, and we're kind of ended on a fun note. What, if you can remember, what is your favorite near fall or pin that you've had in your career?
Oh, mine personally or
yours personally?
Me personally. Oh, near fall.
And I'm putting you on the spot, I know.
You are. Put me on the spot.
I didn't even talk about this because I wanted some spontaneity in this.
Yeah, especially being a guy that wasn't much of a pinner. I can think of one that had no near fall points in it whatsoever.
That's okay. It could be a pin, it could be a near fall, anything of that sort.
Oh, man, you're really making me rack my brain now. Let's see. Probably getting the first one in college, like definitely coming in,
yeah,
was not a pinner in high school.
Right.
Not a pinner in college. I can probably count on one, maybe have to go to the second hand for how many pins I had in college. But after going through some battles and some ups and downs through a few years, getting that first pin in college, I can't off the top of my head remember who the opponent was, but getting the first one in college was a big deal. I felt really good about that one.
Awesome. And that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Near Falls with D Hall. I want to thank Aaron for taking your time out and sitting down with me. I really enjoyed our conversation. I want to recognize a couple people that's been helping me out behind the scenes. I really am learning the best I can, and I'm trying to get as much content out to you guys as I can. I want to thank Eric Evans for doing the audio side and the editing, because without him, I wouldn't even have a podcast, because I have no idea how to do that kind of stuff. I eventually want to learn. And I want to thank Brandon Healy for doing some of the cool edits that, you know, you saw with my logo and Justin. And just really want to thank those guys, because right now they're kind of helping me out and helping me learn the process of all these things. And we're going to wrap it up on this note, and just be on the lookout for the next couple podcasts. I have great guests already lined up. I know it's only my second one, but sometime next week, I'm going to be talking to Ty Nauman of Team Nauman and how he started his journey. He's a 2-time All-American at Pitt and a 4-time EWL champion, PIAA champion, and OW. And he has some really cool stories. He was in a movie, and just a really, really cool story that he has for us. So be on the lookout, and thank you guys for taking your time out on the second edition of Near Falls with D Hall. What's up, everyone? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Near Falls with D Hall. Thank you guys for being patient with me. I've had a few technical difficulties trying to record the last podcast. We finally got it done last night, and we have it for you guys today. The issue is, it still is skipping a little bit, talking to the guys on the technical side of things. It is my computer. It's not capable of handling everything the best right now. So I'm going to get a new computer and figure all the technical side out. But it's plenty good enough to listen to, and I'm sorry in advance for any skipping or little technical difficulties we had. Thank you guys again. Enjoy the show.